Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our latest podcast. This is episode 2 of our Q4 planning for peak season. We've got a couple of different faces this time. I have a feeling there's going to be more of an ads bias, given who we've got sat this side of the room. Before we kick into it, though, should we do a couple of very, very quick introductions? Emma, on my left, would you like to go first?
Hi, I'm Emma, and I am the head of seller at VentureForge. I have been in the commerce space for about 12 years now, and over the last 2 years, I've just been solely concentrating on Amazon, and I manage one of the loveliest teams within the business.
Mike's throwing bricks from that side of the room.
So I'm Mike. I'm head of advertising at VentureForge. I've been working Amazon for the last 7 years at different agencies and this one, and I manage the loveliest team at VentureForge.
Cheers, Mike. Bella?
So I'm Bella. I'm the global Amazon advertising manager at Tetrasil. Tetrasil is known for being one of the largest manufacturers of car care products and is one of the largest oil blenders, so really exciting products, all cars and oils. I've been working on Amazon since 2020, so when the COVID boom happened, so it was a really great time to get started on Amazon. And I've been working across DIY, automotive, obviously, home care, spray paints, beauty, just to name a few categories, but
all my favourite things.
Just all the best things.
And you have the best offices as well. I always say that every time.
I need to go. Yeah, you need to hear about these offices.
It's beautiful, but... Yeah.
I'll fill you in later, Mike. You missed out there, definitely. Perfect. Well, look, thank you very much. For those watching at home, obviously, as we always say with these things, any questions that you do have as we work through, please do pop them in the chat and the team will be picking those up. And there will also be a poll popping up on screen now. So if you want to have a read through and obviously select your options as well. Perfect. Moving into the actual podcast itself now then. So as we say, this is kind of the follow-on to the last episode. So if we go right back to the top to start with, let's start at the beginning. When do you start planning for Q4 from a brand position?
As soon as possible. As soon as the last Q4's finished, then you start planning for the next one. So for some people, it's where they make 3/4 of their revenue within that short space of time. So if you're not planning well ahead, then you may suffer from that lack of planning and strategy. So as soon as you can, as soon as you've got the data from the last Q4, use that to then plan ahead.
I definitely agree. And I think because a lot of the times Q4 is pretty similar in terms of trends, you can just really pick up from what you're seeing. So the market share trends that you can see, keywords, things like that. So you're really kind of well-versed when you're getting into Q4.
Mm-hmm. It's already set, ready to go, isn't it?
Yeah.
I like what you were saying about it's an always-on approach. I think we talk to brands and everyone laughs from a retail perspective when you're talking about buying, sourcing 6, 12, 18 months out in some instances. So I think the always-on approach has to be right. What happens if you leave it too late and you don't have that always-on approach?
From a simple thing like stock, if you've not planned ahead with stock, and you're out of stock in your busiest season, that's going to be really detrimental to the business. 1 week out of stock can be about 6 weeks out of trading. You have to be well planned and well ahead. We're in a day and age now where it's very easy to plan. So there should always be some form of strategy in place.
Yeah.
I think a good caveat to that, though, because there will be panic. There definitely will be panic.
Well, there's always reaction.
There's always reaction. There is definitely ways to, apart from stock maybe, where you can still get ahead of Q4 even if you are leaving it a little bit late. As much as we say, plan from the last Q4, if you plan it halfway through the year, you'll be okay. But try and get at least 1 or 2 months out, I would say, and start pushing from that perspective. But if you can't, and it is all panic station, then you've still got loads of things that you can do in the meantime to really maximise.
Yeah. Is that from an ads perspective, you're coming at that in terms of proactive build, if you like?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the good thing about Amazon ads, if you're just doing like the sponsored product, sponsored brand, you can just turn it on whenever you want. Obviously, if you haven't got the budgets, it's going to be a bit of an issue. But, you know, planning ahead with budgets, that's going to be the only kind of hindrance because you can just turn it on whenever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess going into kind of the peak from an ads perspective then, so you mentioned building a couple of months out from. How does that activity change from, say, 2 months out to in peak?
I think the big thing realistically is starting to build that momentum and get the building blocks going for Q4. It's very easy. Like I was saying, if you're panicking and you just turn it on straight away, that's great. You know, you will pick up some extra traffic because you've got the budget.
I say turning it on is simple in theory, isn't it?
Exactly. But the actual planning behind it to start getting those building blocks in place, you're in an optimized position as well, especially if you've got new lines, new products, new campaigns, everything in between. You want to make sure that these are in a good position. They're A, resale ready, yeah. But B, those campaigns are really embedded and that mm-hmm. the algorithm can really trust what you want to serve from yeah. a campaign
and
perspective.
Also, you've optimized them in time. So you're actually, you know, that the lead-in period, I'd say, is just as important as the actual peak period mm-hmm. because you're warming up that audience. And if they're not ready to buy or potentially are already adding to cart, ready for that peak event and seeing the product proposition you have, then you might be losing out.
And we talk to brands a lot about our season strategy as well, don't we? Yeah. Not just from an ads perspective, but from organic as well. Yeah, cost content. Per clicks are lower, mm-hmm. good chance to test and learn, etc. Would you ever build new in peak then?
I think from a DSP perspective. From a DSP perspective, I think we'll touch on that a little bit more in depth later on. But I'd say it's great to do that. Maybe not during peak, but potentially that lead-in period, because you want to prime the audiences, particularly new to brand. Yeah. And I think customers know what they want during that kind of time period in Q4. They know that if they add to cart and then check in the peak season when the deal's alive, they'll know if they want to convert because there's a deal on. Yeah. So it makes sense.
I think you hit the nail on the head there with the warming up of the audiences beforehand. If you want a successful Q4 and you've got the budget for it, DSP is fantastic for that, because you're just accessing brand new audiences that haven't seen your product before, warming them to the idea, slowly getting them further down the funnel. Then hopefully when the promotions hit, if you're running promotions during Q4, that's when you really start to see that uplift.
Mm. Also, you've got those customers that are shopping around. They may not necessarily know your product. If you've got an ad in place prior to Christmas or prior to that panic buying season, then you're straight there, you're straight in front of them. Then you're so much more likely to convert. Because like I panic buy, I try and be organized, but I can't. And I am one for getting hit by an ad and just buying. I am.
You're well, great.
I'm a marketer's dream.
We're hit me with an ad,
I'll buy it.
No, perfect. I think what you said makes complete sense there, Isabella. If you look at the way Amazon consumers shop, everyone's waiting for a deal. Mm-hmm. Do you always discount though?
I think it depends on the strategy. Obviously, we have over 35 brands. Different kind of value proposition and price points. I'd say participation is really key during that period. So if you can discount, do it, because you're basically giving what the customer wants. And if it's a new to brand customer, that could be a future mm-hmm. loyal customer. So why not?
Why not? Yeah. Cost of acquisition is cheaper at that point
exactly.
because they're already there out there.
Yeah, it does Absolutely. Bring back the return eventually. I suppose. Yeah.
And to play devil's advocate to the point, because you don't have to promote, right? I would recommend it if you can, if you've got the margins, if you've got the budget. But Q4 is all about lots of people looking, exactly. right? Lots of potential customers for your products. It's not the end of the world if you don't have a deal on. You can still make those sales. It's capitalizing on that extra footfall, that extra traffic that does get onto Amazon itself or any website as a whole. So even if you don't have a deal, if you can't, then fine, just make sure your ads are in place and working well. Mm. But ideally.
Yeah, because if your competitor is discounted, you've got an ad appearing right next to that kind of competitor product that is discounted. Why would a consumer buy yours during that time? It has to have a really great value proposition and obviously outside market dynamics that might be influencing, but that customer realistically looking at price during that price-driven time is going to purchase a competitor. So why not?
That's the key, I think, there is value proposition if you don't have a promotion. And that could be really hard to do on Amazon at times. Mm-hmm. You know, the amount of times we've heard, or I've heard in the past, brands say, I've got this amazing product, but if you can't convey that well enough to the customer, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, especially if you're more expensive.
Yes, expensive and also not well known. If you're not doing anything off Amazon, how can you expect a consumer to buy on Amazon when they don't understand the product? So
it's that brand trust, isn't it, more than anything else? You're going to buy a product, not a brand in most cases.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I agree with that. Just going back to something you said then, Mike, is there an argument to not advertise then? Demand's up, consumer purchases are up. Why advertise?
I can see why you'd ask it, but it's a ridiculous statement, Josh.
It's everyone else.
Yes, everyone else is, right? You know, it's very much you need to be present, you need to be there. With the way that Amazon's, over the years, the advertising layout has looked on the search results anyway, you really need to make sure that you're present, because if you're not hitting the top banner or the top five sponsored ad placements, you've then got your five organics, and then I think it's 10 more ads as well. So really, organic is, it's great. It's going to get you those sales, but ads are really prominent and you need to make sure you're there. Much to your disarray, Emma, from an organic perspective.
But it's pay to play.
It is.
Like, you have to. In this, what if in this time now, Amazon is 100% pay to play.
Yeah,
and that's why you need a hell of a lot more budget in Q4, because there's so many more people paying to play. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything just increases.
Yeah. That was a weird question. Just
I was going to say, you've even got some brands that don't advertise a lot throughout the year and go crazy in Q4, like what you're saying, like where some brands make 3/4 of the revenue for the entire year in that period. So if you're one of those brands, or you're up against those sort of brands, you really need to pay to win. Because everyone in that market is fighting for those exact same customers, and it's the ones that stand out and ultimately get the best placements that will see the biggest wins.
I will say, though, I have seen brands where they haven't got any promotional strategy on Amazon that do well in Q4. It depends on your category, obviously, but if sometimes when you're playing things like DIY, it's very much an impulse buy, or if they already know the brand, they don't necessarily need the price point because they trust it.
Yeah.
But I think if you're like in electronics, for example, then it's almost like, yes, you are going to have to pay to play. I think sometimes in DIY, not necessarily all brands need to be running promotions to potentially win in terms of the traffic that they're capturing.
Yeah. It goes back to, somebody said it earlier, about being present in the, you know, cyber weekends, prime days, whatever it is. That doesn't mean discounting. It could be increased ads contribution. It could be different bundle offers. There's loads of ways that you can participate in these events. I think everyone just goes to the default of discount.
Yeah,
it's not always the right approach, though, is it?
Not always the race to the bottom. I think we spoke about it before in previous episodes, having an Amazon exclusive product, bundling, making sure that you're not just racing to discount. Content create, like your designs and everything can have a massive effect on what you're converting. I think I said it was like 30% of customers are more likely to convert based on a well-designed storefront, especially around Christmas, because you are browsing, you are looking for ideas. So having that content is key.
100%. We always talk about content, don't
we? I love content.
Christmas banners on the top of anything.
Yeah. I think it's so important from a branding perspective, and like what you just said, Mike, showing what the product is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Simple, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a visual world. Yeah. Everyone is more impacted now by what they visually see. Mm. They're less likely to read some of the content, but if the design and the imagery is there, you're going to catch someone's eye.
Yeah. It's the old retail mindset. Eye level is buy level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Goes back to your point around placements. Mm. You've got to be in the consumer mindset to convert, haven't you? Going back up then, so we've obviously started to go into a little bit of detail, but talking specifically about the ad side of it then, and we were talking about kind of pausing campaigns, building campaigns, optimizing. If you were to go into Q4 and you noticed something wasn't performing, how would you go about tackling that?
You want to go?
Yeah, sure.
I see you biting your tongue there.
Yeah. You want to go?
Like, ooh, okay. I am a sucker for saying it depends, because it does depend here.
Yes.
I think the big thing that depends on is ultimately what your strategy is for Q4. A lot of brands will be looking to profit max, make as many sales as possible, and drive that profit. But a lot of other brands will also be looking to just dominate from a market share perspective moving forward. One of the, it's not a very well-known secret, but it's not really a secret. So one of the big things, I think, realistically for the success building into the next year as well, is if you have a really strong Q4 where you've built that market share, then you're going to see that success going into January, February, March, you know, if you can keep building that momentum. So from an ad strategy perspective, you're probably not pausing anything, even if it performs quite badly. If it's driving those sales and really driving that revenue, then you ignore the ROAS, the ACOS, the TACOS for now. Focus on profitability later. It's sales in the moment. Whereas if your objective is much more profit-led, which can be harder with discounts, definitely, that's when I would say you need to be a bit more on top of it with your ads, and then you are pausing things here and there. If it's a bottom funnel campaign, is what I would say. So if it's trying to drive sales, it's not performing.
Yeah.
Maybe let's scrap that one. If it's a campaign, let's say like a sponsored brand or display, like a category target that's just trying to acquire those customers and bring them in, you might be okay leaving that. You might not expect the highest performance out of this.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think a holistic view is really key. And Q4, when you isolate it, is just a completely different environment from an ads perspective. So what I would also say is just don't pause anything. Keep going. Focus on the visibility side of things. Efficiency is for the following quarter, the following year. So yeah, massively agree with you on that one.
It's quite interesting that you talk about that from a holistic position rather than a ROAS, ACOS, TACOS figure. What is the most important metric to track then? Because obviously when you talk about ads, that they're the numbers you're talking about, but you've almost kind of gone against that to a degree to go not spend, but to that effect.
Yeah, I think it comes down to what is the overarching objective? Mm. If it is sales and just driving incremental sales during that period, then you are likely to not want to care about the ACOS side of things. You just want to see that incrementality. So I'd be focusing on market share metrics, what the competitors are doing, like are we taking share from them? So using ad tech platforms like Profiteer, for example. And I'd also just basically look at, okay, organic ranking wise, how are we growing? Are more people buying our product? Are we getting more new to brand? So obviously tapping that in with DSP and things like that. So looking at it from a growth perspective.
Mm-hmm. It depends on what part of that, like the life cycle of your business is. If you are in that growth, then what your metrics are will be very different to when you're in that stability or you're looking to increase. Like there's so many different stages of a life cycle, and that always depends on what metrics you'd be following.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do agree. Like both points, like absolutely nailed it. The only thing I could possibly add there is having a look at brand metrics within the console and looking at share of voice and how you stack up against the median and category tops. Can be really interesting to see just where you're positioned. You might not get that data as quickly as you would like. It's going to be a little bit of a lag to it, but at least when you're reviewing the performance of Q4, you'll be able to look back and go, oh, I was doing really well, or not. Yeah. Maybe you didn't, but ideally you do.
Just explain what you mean by category median, category top, because we talk to a lot of brands I don't think they've seen or they really understand what that means.
Yeah, so you can look at... God, it's going to be hard to explain, actually, without it right in front of me. So in the brand metrics section within the advertising console, you can look at the three different stages of the funnel, or three traditional stages of the funnel, of awareness, consideration, and purchase, and how you stack up against the rest of the market. So you'll be giving your shoppers or your brand a category median, and how they're performing, which is the 50th percentile, I believe, and the category top, which is the 95th to 99th percentile as well. So comes up as a lovely little bar chart for anyone that loves one like me. And you can just see where you're pacing. So you can see some quick and easy trends within there. Quite often what you'll see from like a Black Friday perspective is you can see immediately where you're getting the wins and where your competitors are getting the wins. So you might see that some of your competitors are ramping up at a faster rate than you. Within that, that's a really important thing to be aware of. If you can, for us, if we can go to our clients and go, this is what your number one brand is doing, or what we estimate your number one brand is doing, and we can see that from a data perspective, it encourages a conversation to go, we need to be reactive, we need to act on this and start increasing those budgets and moving a bit faster. That's ultimately what the client wants to hear, is that we're on top of it, we're looking at these metrics so that when it gets to the actual weekend of Black Friday, where it's the real big shopping event, that's when we want to be maximising and we want our graph to be up here and the competitors down here.
From a brand perspective as well, so if you have an Amazon ads contact, they often give you, well, if you request for it, you get data that kind of shows you your positioning. So the category median, category top, the category bottom, and it's really good just to see where you kind of lie in there. It's like if you haven't got the budgets to look at how you fit in terms of market share, I think that's a really nice way of understanding how you fit into the category.
Yeah. It's always good to look around you and be able to see what's happening with other brands and competitors.
Yeah, because it's so important. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, like, even if you can't afford the ad tech or you don't have the ad tech or you have an agency that has it as well, just a simple search on some of your common keywords and seeing who's appearing for what, looking on those product pages, who's appearing there. In those paid placements, that's all really useful information and stuff that can make a massive impact in terms of your decision making and then therefore the success of Q4.
We love an incognito search.
Oh, yeah.
Just don't click on the ad placements. Or if they're not yours, obviously, please do.
Double click those ad placements.
No, Josh, we never do that.
Perfect. No, thank you. Sorry. And then we've started to talk about kind of ads formats and building, et cetera, et cetera. What is the right form of ad placement to use during Q4? Because obviously we've talked about awareness, we've talked about conversion. Where should you be focusing?
So in terms of placement, I wouldn't necessarily just look at placement. I'd look at audience. So for example, with DSP, I'd be looking at targeting the right audience that has a high affinity to purchase, that is potentially that new to brand. So in that kind of placement kind of thing, it doesn't really matter because it's the person that we're targeting. And then in terms of placement, depends again. Like I think I'm just stealing your line now.
Politician's answer.
Yeah. Always it depends.
I mean, if you really want to drive that visibility, which I would say if you've got the budgets to do that, do it. It's top of search. So yeah, using the creative formats as well as sponsored brand, sponsored display video to take that top of search placement and then sponsored product.
Okay.
You know what? I'm going to drive a controversial opinion here. And I don't normally do this.
Don't advertise.
I'm usually on the fence. Yeah, don't advertise. It depends on your market as well, right? So top of search traditionally is going to be where you get the best click-through rate, the best conversion rate. Most brands will see that. However, in Q4, and again, it does depend on market, and this is why you need to look at last year's data and see what's there, you get a lot of browsing traffic. So a lot of people will see that top of search. That's great.
This was going to be my question.
But they're scrolling. They're having a look. They're seeing what's around. So you can't necessarily just completely remove all targeting towards the rest of search or product page placements. It's so easy to just go, yep, whack it top search, loads of people are going to click, going to get some sales. But actually, think about the browsers, the people that you've brought in that have gone, oh, a deal, you know, and they've not gone, I need this. People that need it are buying at top search. Mm. The people that are browsing are looking a little bit further and seeing if they're getting anything better as a better value proposition.
Yeah, and those are the efficiency builders, I suppose, because you know that the return on ad spend and that ACoS is much better. So that's actually going to give you a win in terms of when you're reporting or even just looking at the month's data.
Would that be different from an organic perspective? As in, would you be likely to see more storefront traffic, more increased basket value or anything like that in peak periods?
I think towards the back end of Black Friday, like leaning more towards like the panic buyers for actual Christmas Day, you will see a natural increase in conversion in people hitting those storefronts and utilizing the storefront more because they are looking for that inspiration. I think for around Black Friday and Prime Days, people are going in with more of an idea of what they are wanting to buy, or they're navigating through the homepage of Amazon where it's like top deals or whatever. Like I mentioned in the last one that one of the busiest shopping days was Christmas Day because people were bored or they had Amazon vouchers to spend. And I think naturally there you will see a much larger increase in people browsing a storefront, browsing webpage products that they've not really seen before.
Yeah,
it changes very quickly in a very short space of time.
Yeah. I can say that almost supports what you were saying about the awareness piece, doesn't it? Mm. Making sure you are top of search in there. Mm. Okay, so talking about key events then, Black Friday, Cyber Weekend, Christmas, etc. Do you change how you approach each of those, or do you have an always-on approach right the way through?
Depends on the ad type.
That's a common thing through here, isn't it?
No, I would say an always-on approach is really important, and I think being reactive, so having a reactive kind of budget mindset is really important. But overall, you kind of just want to do what you're doing, but kind of like do it more.
Yeah.
In a simple way, just push it further because it's more expensive. You just need to be on top of the bids and the adjustments and just capturing that traffic. But again, it's just that, but on a obviously higher level because it's a busier time period.
I completely agree. And the only thing I would add to that is one of the few things that I do introduce or change after a key event. So we've had Prime Day recently, you know, after that event, what I've started to introduce into more accounts that didn't have it is the views remarketing and, if applicable, purchases remarketing, depending on the product. There are a lot of customers that will have looked and not purchased, even when they're discounted over the period. What I like to do with views remarketing is try and bring them back in time for Black Friday or in time for that Christmas run-up if they haven't made that purchase. Again, it's product dependent and industry dependent because, you know, if it's protein powder, you might just buy it every 60 days, whatever. And that's how you set your targets. But if you've got something that is like a TV and they didn't buy it the first time round, then great. Then you'd be like, right, well, let's have a look again on Black Friday instead of Prime Day. On the flip side as well, like from Black Friday into the run-up to Christmas, you've got a period there where there's still going to be customers looking for Christmas gifts. They might have had a little look on Black Friday and not complete the purchase. Might be the budget side. Might not have been able to spend the discretion income. And then the brand new thing that has just come out is there is now a sponsor display target for basket abandoners, which I've yet to implement, I can't lie. But I am quite excited about because I think, again, post Black Friday, looking towards Christmas, I'm a shopper that just whacks anything they want into the basket and then gets rid of them afterwards if I just don't want it anymore.
Just waiting for it to go on sale.
Exactly. Yeah. But that classes as a basket abandoner. So then you can start pushing these people back again from Prime Day into Black Friday or from Black Friday into the Christmas buyers as well. So it could be some really good opportunities there.
Yeah, and I think it's a good, just to even try it, just to understand what the consumers are doing across your product base. Because if they are abandoning and you can't actually get them to purchase, then that's a sign there that you've lost them. And that category, it might just not work with those add-to-basket abandoners. So
yeah. Have you started to test that already then?
No, okay. I haven't. I have started doing the bid adjustments for the add-to-cart on sponsored products, which I think that's kind of like pretty interesting from my point of view because, you know, I'm seeing a lot of add-to-carts, particularly across high traffic moments. And then I'm wondering, okay, can we obviously retarget them or just increase the bids to try and get them back? I think it's definitely something that we're going to be trying. Who knows, Q4?
I was going to say, on that point, like Amazon have actually introduced a fair few new things in the last couple of months that are going to be quite big for Q4 this year.
Yeah.
So it's actually a bit of a competitive edge if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
With the introduction of AMC, Amazon Marketing Cloud, as well, I think the utilizers of that are going to have a great, great Q4. Alongside what you're saying, the adjustments that we can make within sponsored products, within sponsored display as well, and the different targeting types. Even the rules, if you don't have anything like day parting that is active as well from an external source, you've got a fair few different ways that you can now really optimize even more from a non-external tool perspective.
Yeah.
That could be quite exciting. Q4.
AMC's huge. Yeah, I'm loving it. Someone that hasn't got coding experience, I finally can have a look at the data without having to do some Python work or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I spent 6 months trying to learn SQL.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Biggest waste of my life. ChatGPT can do it.
Is it the right time to test new things, though?
I'd say yes.
Yeah.
I did a whole like research piece into launching in Q4 and what to do as a brand within Q4. And I think you've got that increase in traffic, you've got that natural change in purchasing behaviour. I think it's a really, really good time to test. Obviously, it's inflated, so come Q1, Q2, it may be slightly different, but I think you're capturing a ready audience. I am a firm believer in using that audience.
Yeah. I was going to say, one of you guys said it earlier, if you're not doing it, your competitors will be.
Yeah, exactly. And now I think I was speaking to a lot of brands recently and they're all starting Black Friday on the 1st of November.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that always on approach, using that traffic, you have to.
Yeah.
Everyone else is.
100%.
I mean, over the last few years, I remember Black Friday was a couple of days. Then it's Black Friday week now. And it's going to be Black Friday month, like realistically. It's inevitable. The entirety of November will be very discount driven, which is something to be aware of as a brand, as you know, anyone that is working with brands. You might need to be ready to adapt a bit on the fly at the start of November.
Yeah.
If you've got a few competitors in market that are pushing a little bit early, what are you doing about it?
Yeah.
I think it's a good point as well to note that it's becoming longer discount periods, and looking at the data, understanding your consumer is going to be really key, because it might be that you shouldn't be doing the discounts the whole time because customers are smart. They know that there's these deals for like months now. So they might just be coming in and out and then waiting to the last day. And then,
even though you're going to go on deeper discount at some point.
Exactly.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, speaking a lot about ads, would you test and learn with SEO, keywords, content in that key period?
I think with organic, sometimes it can be a little bit, you have to be cautious because organic can take a lot longer to convert than an ad. But from a design perspective, from a storefront perspective, those changes can be quite quick. And I would always be in favour of adapting for the quarter, adapting for seasonality. But from a content perspective, like written content, you don't want to change too much if it's working. Like, don't try and fix it if it's not broke type situation. It's really just gauging how each listing is doing. Like, we do it very well where we look at it ASIN by ASIN to make sure that we're optimizing where we need to.
Do you always run a risk of trying to do too much at once as well, don't you? If they're changing keywords and ad formats at the same time, how do you know what's working?
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to question, would you ever consider launching a new product in Q4? Because I was speaking about this with a brand recently, where you've got a price establishment and a honeymoon period. Is it the right time to do it? Because, you know, you want to capitalize on all that traffic, but...
I think, yeah.
Just, it depends on the brand and the sector.
If you're comfortable... Well, if you're investing and you're comfortable with just trying to grow the product, I think it's a good time. I think being retail ready is going to be obviously really important. You don't want to throw the money away to, you know, land on a listing that has one really blurry image and, you know, no stock availability or whatever. But I think why not? There's a lot of traffic. You could generate a lot of views and that can help you in the long run.
And nowadays, everything can be a gift. Absolutely everything. Like, especially as you grow up. That grass seed really is the highlight. Like, I think I got my husband a wheelbarrow last year. Like, everything can be a gift. So,
I mean, it's true.
Use the audience while they're there looking for them.
I'm going to say, I think you nailed it there, Bella. You talked about investment. You can obviously launch products at key times, but if you're not investing in it, are you ever going to see any visibility? Cost per clicks are up, views are up. You've got to invest heavily to make it work, haven't you? Sticking on that investment piece then, budget management. I think one of the key topics we always talk to brands around, really open-ended question, how do you manage budget in a key period?
Unlimited. Completely unlimited. Forget all finances. Don't tell
your FD. That Alex signed up.
The ideal.
Just
everything on max. Full visibility all times.
Absolutely everything. 900% top search on everything. That is a joke for everyone. It's difficult, to be fair. Is a really easy answer to this is that you need to be smart about what metrics and what trends that you have seen previously. And if you haven't seen the trends previously, then doing a bit of market share or market analysis and research is probably going to help get you your feet off the ground there. I would say it's quite clear that you're going to have a week-long period where you should be at those real higher budgets. But again, don't neglect that run-up, especially as we were saying before, in terms of as brands are starting earlier, at the start of November, we have to be reactive, we have to match to it. Those ad budgets probably have to at the same time. But I would definitely be skewing it to ramp up towards the end of the month, with it having a fairly sharp drop, I would say, into December, still keeping it up there, but not as high as that Black Friday, Cyber Monday weekend where that's where your big, big traffic is most of the time.
I think I'd also add... Sometimes as a brand, you might get given, you've got this additional budget for Q4, get it going. If you have a very significantly lower budget and you're trying to grow it to, if you're adding another 20K, you need to be doing it slowly. So it has to be something that's gradual because you don't want to be wasting money and just throwing all the budget in. It has to be optimized and it takes time to build. So I would definitely add that, you know, make sure that you've got those expectations in place with your senior team so that they know that you can't just accelerate all the ads like that. It takes time.
Return's going to diminish as well. It's easy to spend the money, but what you actually get from it can be negligible in some instances.
You see it very commonly where people just have an increased budget from the 1st of December to the end of December, but there's no time to grow and optimize before that.
Exactly. And then the KPIs are like, why is it so low? It's like, well, it takes time to grow.
Exactly.
You had loads of money. I can spend it.
It's not often we say that they don't have enough budget. What about things like bid boosting, day parting?
If you've got the ad software, then you're going to get, like, we use PackView. There's some great tools on there in terms of telling us what it is or when you should be spending, ultimately. So then you get that real insight. You can make the assumption for most brands, not all, But most brands that middle of the night hours, you know, between 12 and 6 a.m., maybe 5, is going to be quieter. If you really wanted to reduce them down, you could there, if you have to, absolutely have to. But you'll often see peaks around breakfast time or in the morning where, depending on brand and product and the industry that you're in, you might see a couple of uplifts there. But at lunchtime, people at work just got an hour, have a little look. And then the evenings. Evenings is the big one. That's where people got the most free time. They're going to be more opportunities to browse. Budgets are so important from that perspective because if you are limited by budget, then you're not making it to the evening and you are missing out on a huge chunk of traffic. Mm. So be smart about how much budget allocating and where and the strategy that goes behind it, because if you're missing out on all that traffic at the end of the day, you're probably not maximising the sales. Yeah.
Also, it depends on your customer. I think in the like the mother and baby sector, the 3 a.m. club is a massive deal now. Like all mums are literally like daydream shopping on Amazon, and it's part of that 3 a.m. club.
It's not just mums, it's dads as well.
Dads as well, yeah. But yeah, like really knowing your audience, knowing that consumer behaviour is really key. So if you are in that, I don't know, toy sector or mum and baby sector, where you're selling like a simple thing like nappies, you may see an increase at 3 a.m. Where people are really panic buying because they've run out or they need something urgent. So.
Yeah, day parting based on sales conversions, I think, is just the key there. But coming from brands potentially that don't have that investment, I think going to your Amazon ads contact and just understanding at what times you're really getting as many purchases as possible is going to help. But if you don't have the data, sometimes it is just, you're just putting more budget behind it and you're kind of wasting a little bit of budget here and there.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. We had this recently, didn't we? Yep. With a client, very surprised at the style of product they sell. It was a very much a pickup, unconsidered 2, 3 a.m. purchase because you needed it at that point, didn't you? And this was a significant business, but that's when they were out of budget. Late at night. Yeah, yep. They were just out of budget. And they were out of budget, what, I think 10, 15, 20% of the time, every day. Significant sales loss, wasn't it?
Imagine absolutely what they could have gained. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's great because you've identified that. Yeah. Now it's kind of not an easy win, but it's just a quick fix.
Yeah,
just using that data.
And Amazon will tell you most of the time if you are running out of budget. Mm-hmm. You don't have to think about it. It's just, it will tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Take those numbers with a pinch of salt, but it will tell you if it's out of budget.
Yeah.
Maybe don't put the £1,000 daily budget just because Amazon says so.
Yeah.
You've spoken a few times about Amazon ads contacts. Mm-hmm. Do you work quite closely with them?
Yeah, so when you are working as a brand on Amazon, you obviously have a set budget allocation. And with that budget allocation, you get tiered support. So everybody within categories should have an Amazon ads contact. So that's somebody that basically sells Amazon ads products to you, but they're really helpful in terms of giving you the data and connecting you with other people in the businesses within the Amazon business regarding like content optimizations and things like that. But basically they support you from a data standpoint, depending on the tier, obviously how much you're spending. But yeah, they're a great source of information because obviously before AMC, I couldn't get a lot of data. We had very limited data sources, so it's really helpful for trying to find out a bit more about the categories that we play in.
Good. Mm-hmm. And is the data they provide useful? Is it similar to like an AVS? They'll tell you what they want you to know, or do they give you
a little bit of both?
Yeah.
You know, you always get the sales pitch when it comes to things like Amazon Prime. It's like, oh, we've grown. We've got way more people watching Prime, and you know, you should invest, and that's great. And I think if that's part of your strategy, then definitely have a look at that. But like anything to do with Amazon ads, I think you have to take things with a pinch of salt and interrogate the information because, yeah, they want you to spend more. But is that right for the brand? And particularly with different sponsored product and sponsored brand display, OLV, Prime, you need to just decide what it is that you're trying to do and get them to work with you on that rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
It's knowing your brand and knowing where that sits within your brand. It's very easy to take it at face value and be like, okay, I'll do that.
Yeah.
But when you know your brand, you know what your overall strategy is, especially for Q4, there is a lot of information and help there.
Yeah.
Without running the risk of upsetting people at Amazon. Which is fine.
I probably already have. Sorry, guys.
We support Amazon. We're on board with Amazon.
Don't worry, I'm going to upset you even more. It is, like you're saying, it's their job to sell advertising to you. 100%. It's their job to make money, you know, from you as a client. It is the role of an agency or someone in-house to grow that business. Yeah. There is a key difference there. So you do need to take everything with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
When the brand new shiny thing is out, yes, everyone will find out about it, but it does not mean it's not with to you.
Ireland.
Exactly. Oh, wow. Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That brand new shiny thing lost its shine very quickly.
No, I don't think I've seen a single brand be successful yet in Ireland.
Oh, my word. One of the craziest launches.
Yeah, that's success. No.
Wait, I don't think we've even started looking at that.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we've got so many of this marketplaces to worry about.
Yes. Wait another 12 months because then they might have something sorted with it. But that was one of those things where you're sold that Amazon dream and it just... Yeah. That's when it was handy having an agency and the clients that did launch because we could help support and there's a lot of support with that one.
Yeah. I think with things like that, having a soundboard is really great.
Yes.
Mm. It's so important. And when you're within a brand, oftentimes the Amazon team is pretty isolated from the rest of the business. Yes. So it's really good to get the soundboard, whether it's an agency, Amazon ads contact or, you know, other brands. So,
just someone to bounce ideas off. As we've said, there's 10 different schemes that probably started while we're in this room. And like you say, in a couple of little tactical bits, there's five that are dropped off as well. Just having that sounding board is 100% the right thing to do. Sticking with kind of tech, we've spoken quite a lot about AMC kind of data within the platform. How do you use AMC? Because it is a bit of a buzzword, I guess, at the moment. I mean, it launched however long ago, but it only really now seems to be really coming to fruition.
Yeah. AMC, I've started looking at it when we started doing DSP. And I started doing DSP with different brands. And it was always a great way to assess kind of what the performance was like from a prior month perspective.
Yeah.
So looking at the path to purchase, understanding where the investments should be from a Amazon advertising kind of point of view. Now, I think it's grown because there's so many different data points that you can get. And I think from my point of view, it's a great way to build marketing plans and brand plans, getting that data and understanding the customer with a lot more data points that you just wouldn't get because sponsored product, as good as it is, you just don't know how many new to brand customers that is. So you can build a plan, understand the attribution, and I think it's game changer for brand plans.
Absolutely.
I was just going to say, I think AMC is a tool where it's like, where the base version is like on Amazon, is very much a planning tool and it's good for insights.
Yeah.
There's not a lot that you can immediately just snap your fingers and it's going to transform your entire business. You'd have to really work with that data to get to that point. I was lucky enough to be part of a beta last year and I've been looking at it for a long time. Again, trying to learn SQL for a very long time, not worth it. But the path to purchases and the conversion report within Amazon now as well, that's a big decision maker, right? Or helps the decisions. If you can see that it's coming from DSP first and it's filtering its way down, or you've got a load of people buying or clicking on sponsored brands first or seeing sponsored brands first, then making the purchase elsewhere, you get a bit of justification in some of your results at the same time. Generally, sponsored brands perform a little bit lower than sponsored products and sponsored display a lot of the time. If a brand sees that and goes, well, why is that doing absolutely nothing? It's like, wow, well, actually, let me show you this path conversion report that I've pulled here from AMC. Then all of a sudden you get a bit more clarity and it's, okay, well, this is for this part of the funnel.
Yeah.
And it is driving these sales and it's really important. That's something that you could never have before, you know, and it was, you just had to rely on someone knowing marketing to go, yeah, if you put it in the top of the funnel, they'll work their way down, they'll see it and then they'll buy. Now we've got actual data behind it. It's great.
And showing them that actually more touch points on Amazon gives you a higher conversion, well, a chance of conversion anyway, because if they're seeing a sponsored product and not buying straight away, they might see it on sponsored display and vice versa. So,
is there a risk of too much data?
Oh, always.
There's nothing wrong with too much data.
It's how you use it. Yeah. I think Amazon can be quite difficult to get the data that you require, but then some reports are fantastic. Mm. I mean, like, I think we did a whole business-wide exercise where we were like, how many data points are we looking at? How many spreadsheets are we looking at? What do we actually use and what do we read? And that's for your business to look into it in detail and weed out what you don't require. I could live by death by spreadsheet. I love a spreadsheet.
I was going to say, that's a really funny, like, you both responded with different answers there. Yeah. Like, from a seller perspective, it's very much like, yes, you can get carried away. And we're like, no, not enough data. I need everything.
It's great like, having data. Because with Amazon Ads, I think the question is always, like, is this the right investment? And the more data points you can get, the more information about the customer journey that you have is you really can explain that, whether from a brand perspective or agency. I think, yeah, you need the data because the questions always come and you need to have that.
From a seller's perspective, there was a new bit of data that one of my team members found, and it basically showed where someone had purchased, say, grass seed, for instance, and then they came back a day later and bought another box of the same size. So they were obviously having an issue where they weren't buying enough for the area that they were seeding. So that was a really handy bit of data to say, we need maybe a bit more information on what that covers, or do we need to bundle this up and sell a box of two?
Yeah.
And that bit of data was an addition, and now we love it.
Yeah. Could it create a bit of a knee-jerk effect, though? I guess if you're in Q4, traffic is up, volume up, conversion up, does it almost create a false sense of security or cause you to make knee-jerk reactions, though?
I think it has to be viewed in isolation in a way. And then you kind of have to have this approach of, okay, you're getting all this data from Q4. The customer behavior is specific to that period. And it's obviously also seasonal. So if you've got seasonal products, you need to have a look at that. But look at it in isolation. Mm-hmm. I would always look at the wider the year and look at the trends. I think it's really easy to make those knee-jerk reactions, but that's why you have a plan in place. So you just follow the plan.
Absolutely. The way people, like you said, the way people shop in Q4 is very different. And there are some brands and agencies out there that I'm aware of that strip out negative targeting over the period, because something that didn't work in July actually might work in Q4.
That's interesting. Okay.
It's a very interesting approach that I don't recommend for every single keyword. Yeah, exactly. but there are some where, you know, they see some success from it. But again, depends on their objective. They're looking at a ROAS max or ACOS, like max profitability. I wouldn't recommend doing that. You know, that sounds like a disaster.
I mean, unless that it's completely unrelated and you're wasting money, it just doesn't make sense, because the traffic that you'd be getting for that keyword might be getting you the conversions.
Mm. Absolutely. It's those little iffy ones where it's like, well, I could see it making a sale. Yeah. You know, it's like it's a related product, maybe. Yeah. I could see that being removed and it working, but yeah, I wouldn't recommend it necessarily.
And then you'd have to question as well, like, what's the listing quality? If they're not converting on that keyword, what's actually happening on the front end for the consumer? Because if it is related and they're not converting, then there's a question mark there about the product pages.
How would you get it all to work together in Q4? AMC, DSP, sponsored ads, SEO.
Life and seller, organic. It's that whole strategy. I think, you know, from previous quarters, quarter fours in particular, what's worked and what hasn't. And I think as a team, you always should meet together from both sides of the fence, whether it's organic or PPC or design, and you come up with a plan for that. Having a basic plan, like that, you have to have space for reactivity. Christmases have changed over like the last 5 years drastically. So you can plan as much as possible.
Yeah.
But just as a team, come up with that together.
Yeah.
Don't work in silo. Make sure that you're working together.
And I think preparation is really key from a SEO perspective and content perspective. That should be something that you're working towards if it's possible, because sometimes things happen where it's a new product launch or whatever. But I think having that preparation ahead of time and having the implementation in place before you start then doing all the advertising, and then you've got the AMS side of things, and then you're layering the DSP, and that's where it all kind of comes together. And then the AMC side is, you know, the planning stage or potentially the measuring stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can't even add more to that. Spot on. I mean, we could have an entire separate podcast about strategy, realistically.
Just have a podcast about advertising.
If that's the next one we're doing.
But yeah, I think the key thing really that Emma said was being reactive, or like having the room to be reactive as well. It's so easy to have your very strict plan and it can very quickly go off course, and should go off course in some areas, really. If things are going well, it's like, right, let's steer this way off course and really maximize. But this isn't Q4 side, but anyone that was working in the e-commerce space when COVID hit, you know, there was no stock ready for the COVID levels that was going to happen. No one had the plan in, or the contingency plan there for advertising. I'm not going to say there's going to be another round of COVID and that we're going to need to just react like that. But if you're doing really well and there's something like something really big is happening, maybe your top competitors just ran out of stock. Like, oh my gosh, this is my time to shine. Mm. Make sure that's there and you're ready to go. Mm. And that's what's going to tie everything together. Not relying on your competitors from that stock, but being ready for everything.
We were speaking outside of the podcast around trends and how quickly they're hiking, spiking, and then plummeting.
Yeah.
So it's being ready for that. Like Q4 trends will be completely different to what they are today. Like the week before Christmas, something viral might happen somewhere else.
Yeah.
And your product then suddenly becomes the one to buy. So
I would also say the seasonality, like the weather. Yep. So if you've got a weather reactive product, you really need to keep close because obviously it could be something as simple as a de-icer. And I mean, already seeing that huge spike in a keyword volume. So it's like, okay, it's not that cold where I am, but you have to be reactive in that space.
Yeah.
The beast from the east, do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah.
That was a time.
You mentioned something quite interesting earlier, Bella, when you were talking about market share. Obviously, we've spoken a lot about kind of the tactical ACOS, ROAS, TACOS. Where does market share feature in all that? I've got quite a polarizing opinion of this.
Oh, interesting. But from my point of view, I think market share is really, really great from looking at a year perspective. And I think when you are doing kind of a holistic kind of digital Amazon campaign, I think it really can help you understand the impact of that. You can look at it granularly. You know what I'm saying? So that word. When you're looking at it from that perspective, you can really see, like, for example, if you're increasing your spend significantly, you can see if that's had an impact on your market share, particularly on Amazon. So I think it is a great tool. It's not the end all of all things.
We try and tell clients that sometimes, don't we?
It's like the ROAS number. It's like, that's also not, you know, you shouldn't be looking at that in isolation. But I think it is important to see what the market is doing. And even from a planning perspective, when you're seeing, okay, you're increasing your budget, your competitor's going down, that means whatever you're doing is having an impact. So that's my opinion. Yeah. I want to hear yours now.
I very similar to it. It's a very good upstream metric. Mm-hmm. I think you can see what's happening from a top level from brands. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really easy to see kind of almost that game of chess that you get into sometimes. You'll do something from an SEO perspective. Great. You can see the climb. You can see brand B now counteracting that. Brand C is also starting to fight it. I think it gives you such a good upstream measure. Mm-hmm. But I think what it gives you, and I think this is what a lot of brands miss sometimes, you start to talk about this, is the data that sits behind that market share piece. So number of products that have been sold. You don't have to sell 5 million products to be successful. You can have 6 or 7 bestsellers that just trend, e.g. de-icer, AdBlue, I know is one of your biggest ones, that they see success in. Mm. Average price points is a massive factor. But I think the one we talk to brands more and more about now is the competitiveness of the categories and how number of products are going up. Average price point is starting to erode in most cases. And I think brands miss that bit.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's just one of many data points, which is why you need to look at everything. I mean, I've looked at, you know, not market share necessarily, but looking at investments into certain categories and products. And while the sales out is going really great, you're seeing that the average sell price is going down, and then Amazon isn't actually ordering because of that decrease. So yeah, you do need to look at that, because while market share might look healthy, you need to make sure the long-term plan is aligned with the rest of the metrics. So yeah, I'd agree. I agree with you.
What's been really handy looking into market share data as well is to see, you might get a client say, well, this product's doing a lot better than ours, but we're very similar. Mm. Then you look into it, deep dive, and that product's in a completely different category.
Yeah.
And then you're not competing apples for apples. They might be in the correct category and you might be in the wrong one.
Yeah. Honestly, that's such a crazy
simple
thing. It's honestly crazy when you notice these little things, because from a normal consumer standpoint, it doesn't really matter if they're landing on it, but actually from an organic indexing point of view, you're missing out.
And it's not as easy as it, like, a walking into a bricks and mortar retail store where you might eventually find it.
Just picking it up and moving it from one shelf to another.
Because there are some people that are buying from, you know, the category side of things. It's not everyone, but it's like, what, 10, 15%? It's still a normal amount.
Would you want to change that during Q4, though?
You need to, though.
You'd need to, I think. If Amazon let you. The whole problem is that once you've chosen a category, Amazon's like, that's your chosen category. Yeah. You would have to fight to get that to change. Yeah. But I guess if you're selling, I don't know, one of the most searched for terms that you can see leading up to Q4 is toys for a 3-year-old, toys for a 4-year-old. And there's so much search volume that you need to take into consideration. But yeah, if you're in the wrong category, then you need to get in the right one.
Yeah, I think you need to get it fixed. Doesn't matter when it is, it has to be fixed.
Yeah. Could you imagine if you're selling a little wooden kitchen set in the run-up to Q4 and you're in kitchen? Yeah. And not in toys. I mean,
we have lubricants. We've got the best bargain on the new kitchen.
We have lubricants. So if we were in the wrong one, we're like car lubricants. And yeah, we don't want to be in sexual wellness.
So even worse.
No, it's very, very true. Conscious we're coming into the last sort of 10 minutes or so now. Of course, if anybody's got any questions, please do bother me into the chat and we will respond to those as we go. I guess before we kind of wrap up, last question I have, and this is specifically around the ad side of it. How do you decide when you should double down and spend more, or how do you decide when you should pull back in some instances?
I mean,
it depends.
I was trying not to say it. I was going to say, if you can't tell already, I don't want to pull back, just increase spend. It's a very good question, to be fair, because there are times where things don't work and you do have to. And you have to accept that. We've talked, you know, for a couple of things here, like new product launches and stuff and different campaigns and strategies that you try. It is inevitable that something won't work and you will want to pull back. Whether that's pulling back just that one or two, could be 10 campaigns, right? Or the entire budget back a little bit is a very different story. I'd always go on the more granular level first. pull those back. And then if that top line is changing, ultimately, that's probably not a decision that you've made. It's probably from someone else that's gone, oh, actually, we're spending a bit too much here. I'd always start from a campaign level and start to scale those back if needed. But most of the time, I'm doubled down during Q4. I'm confident in my strategy. I'm confident I know the products, I know the market, know what's going on. And if the few days before the actual Black Friday peak is a little bit slower, that is part of the trends.
Yeah.
And it's just having that confidence, awareness, and understanding in that so that when it does hit the peak, you've built that up, built the momentum up to that point that you're going to have a successful couple of days.
Yeah. Going back to your it depends mantra. So I'd say it depends on your metrics. So if you're trying to grow, obviously scale it. Look at the metrics that matter to you. So if it's visibility and engagement, impressions, click through. If it's growth, you need to make sure that the sellout is kind of matching your investment. But like you mentioned, Mike, you should be pretty much ready to go in Q4. So you should have done the testing well ahead and looked at the market trends to tell you where you should be investing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But from a scale back perspective, from an optimization standpoint, I think I would look at the bid adjustments and just make sure that potentially we're not spending on bids that we're not converting historically, and then... But not turning them off, just reducing, just so we're not throwing money away.
Yeah, I think that's always the hardest bit of it, making sure you're not throwing money away into it. Yeah. Putting an extreme case on the table then, if a competitor throws a hand grenade over, and I mean absolutely dominates your branded search, what do you do in that instance?
A little cry.
Yeah. First you cry, and then you ask for more budget. No, I think... It's, you know, you should be having a defensive strategy that you can just kind of ramp up when that happens. Yeah. I think from a branded defensive standpoint, I think there's different ad types that you can utilize to protect, for example, your product page, the sponsored display. But from a product, sponsored product standpoint keyword, I think you need to be covering. And I think you can see if you need to do that investment by organically looking at the searches. Mm-hmm. If you're seeing that people are, you know, bidding on that, you need to make sure that that's protected. But I think being reactive and aware of the market, and I think this is where market share actually does help. When you start seeing your market share drop and you're like thinking, how is this all of a sudden happening? You're at the top three product. You start seeing that actually they're taking share from your branded terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, defense is definitely what you have to do there, right? I would stray away from the offense on that side as well, because I've had this before many years ago with brands where you get into a bidding war and a price war over cost per clicks, and all of a sudden you're 50, 60, 70p cost per clicks and now £2, £3, £4, and you're like, well, why did I start this? Right? So don't necessarily retaliate, I think, is one important thing there. Just focus on the defence from that perspective. There's a really interesting piece on bidding strategies around defence as well that a lot of people don't really, well, I've not really heard anyone talk about. But you have to think, if a brand is bidding on your search term, the one that you are extremely relevant for, and we know that the algorithm favours relevancy very highly as well as conversion rate, you should have better conversion rate and relevancy than your competitors. So in these defensive campaigns, as long as you're using a dynamic model of sorts in terms of the bidding, you should get a better price on your cost per clicks than what the competitor is paying. So if you are elevating those as well, and they have to elevate even further to take that share, you should be pricing them out quite quickly, realistically. You should be getting the low cost per clicks, they should get the high cost per clicks, as long as you're on a dynamic bidding strategy. If you're on fixed,
yeah,
then you're both paying an arm and a leg.
I think it doesn't, from my experience, it doesn't last long, because oftentimes a lot of these competitor products, if they're not big brands, can't afford it.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a that uplift from their side, but eventually you kind of max them out because, like you said, we're converting better, and eventually they don't have the budget to match ours. So.
You know, you can't go at that level for a long time.
No.
From an organic stance, you just need to hold your ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know your brand, you know your product. I like to review the reviews on those ever-growing products, see what our product does better and maybe change something in the content to compete with that. But you have to hold your ground.
I think pricing is the one that really impacts. So if it's this, for example, a third party that comes in that's significantly cheaper than yours, but then has great reviews, I think that's where it becomes really tricky.
Yeah.
But again, if you're a strong brand and you've got the budget, I think you can defend your space. I think it just, you just got to be comfortable with spending a little bit more in the short term.
Yeah.
I was going to say that's kind of where we're going with it. Sit tight.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can run unprofitably forever.
Yeah.
They're doing it for a reason.
If you want to be a little bit cheeky and savvy as well, if you can work out by searching at different times of the day when they're running out, because in theory, they're pushing a lot more budget into you and your brand. If that overall budget cap hasn't increased by enough, then you can be a bit offensive. You know, switch on those more offensive side of the campaigns targeting their brand towards the end of the day when they've run out of budget. But at the same time, if they are pushing more into your search terms, are they pushing much into generic search terms? Who are you actually trying to get on Q4? Are you trying to get the brand new customers or the people that search for your brand directly?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you might want to question.
Yeah.
So even if they are attacking you, you might actually get more benefit by being able to be more aggressive on the more generic search terms, trying to attract the new customers, rather than just going, oh, panic station, they're attacking me, they're all over my page. Some people just won't care.
Yeah.
They want your brand, they don't want the competitor anyway.
Yeah.
Fair. Perfect. Well, look, coming into the last couple of minutes now, same question I always ask. What is your top tip for Q4 success? Mike, I'll come to you first, just because I'm looking at you.
I couldn't decide. Well, it depends. Just make sure your budget's ready. I think realistically, have a real sense of awareness around what is expected from a spend perspective. Cost per clicks will be increasing. All your competitors will be reacting and increasing their budgets as well. Make sure you're ready. Regardless if you have a discount or not, it's going to be a much more competitive space. You need to be reactive towards it. Just make sure you're ready.
Mm. Perfect. Thank you, Bella.
I'd say don't worry about efficiency. Focus on visibility and be quick to pivot where the data takes you. I think that's the most important thing I'd say. And because you've already been working towards Q4 for so long, I think you understand the market dynamics enough throughout whatever period you were looking at. So really just look at the data and keep close to the budgets and make sure that everything is optimized and you're not spending money on things that aren't going to convert. So being buy box aware.
Yeah.
So I think that would be key.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Thank you. Emma?
For me, it's planning. Know your brand, plan well, and like you said, be ready for that reactiveness that you will inevitably have to have. But as long as you've got a really, really good foundation to what your business is going to do within that quarter, then you should be on some strong foundations.
Yeah, Absolutely. Great.
What's your top tip, Josh?
you put me on the spot now. Listen to the experts. Nice. No, I think it's the dynamics, being dynamic, sorry, I think is the big thing. That can come from so many different angles. Mm. Price point, bid adjustments, organic, SEO.
Team.
React to what's happening. Yeah. Yeah. It's such a fluffy one, isn't it? But I think that is the best, react to what's happening.
Yeah. Get ready.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, look, thank you very much, everyone, for your time today. Thank you to everybody that sat and listened. Any questions anybody does have, please feel free to reach out post the session. And if not, hopefully we'll see you on the next session. Thank you very much.